Now, there's a lot up here on the slides that you, in the interest of time, you'll find that many of these things have been said. So I'm just going to review it from the top. What was new about this set of Paris negotiations? The first thing was that there was a new style of international cooperation. The countries got to state voluntarily what they thought they could do, and by and large, they declared what they thought they could do, not stretch goals. As has been mentioned, the redesign of the conference was based on political thinking and not on climate change thinking. We had known from the earlier times that there were already smaller subnational consortia working effectively and voluntarily on climate change, and so this gave some support to the idea that you could ask everybody to do it. Now, it's been mentioned earlier that there was a convergence of political events in the last 6 months before the negotiation started that I think made the outcome much stronger. First of all, as you've heard, U.S. and China agreed to cooperate on achievable goals. China's committed to peak emission by 2030, and we'll continue on our present path. Another key event was Pope Francis's encyclical Laudato Si, which linked climate to human values and was very persuasive for many people around the world. And then in September, just before the climate negotiations, there were a set of negotiations on sustainable development goals at the UN. These were so amicable that they presaged the better relationships that we expected and found in Paris. And the final thing, it's worth saying, this conference was beautifully prepared. There were indomitable UN leadership, Christiana Figueres and her colleagues, insightful French diplomacy, Laurence Tubiana and her colleagues, a well-designed agenda with the president's meeting first, not last, and good meeting logistics, and as a result, the largest number of heads of state ever gathered anytime, any place, came to that conference. So that was new. We've already heard what Paris did not do. It didn't solve the problem. And I think importantly, it did not materially reduce the near-term threat. As you've heard, it's very likely that we'll get 1.5 degrees by 2030 and greater than 2 by 2050, still likely, because of the energy that is already, the carbon and already in the atmosphere and the energy, heat in the ocean. So what this means is that in the near term, climate change is going to accelerate. We're going to get half a degree in 15 years, and it took us a whole century to get a whole degree in the past. So whatever we do, it's going to accelerate in the near term, and disillusionment is going to be risk. It did not create a legally binding agreement, as you've heard. Now, what did Paris do? Well, first of all, and many people have said this, it expressed clear global intent for the first time. Business as usual is unacceptable. And this large and global agreement actually provides a basis, a new basis for international law. It proved actually that nations can agree on a global scale. The responses actually exceeded prior expectations, however inadequate they are for the ultimate goal. They created a new, more politically rewarding goal, the goal of bending the curve sooner, move up peak carbon. So it makes the decisions focus on the next 15 or 20 years. And this, of course, will imply a faster translation of energy research and scale up of existing technologies, which is why it's going to be important for people like us. They promised to address the 1.5 degree aspirations, likely unachievable in the long, except over the 1,000-year timescale, probably. But it does warn against letting up should we believe that we're on the track for 2 degrees. And we created an adaptive management framework, which is what you do when you know you have a problem you can't put off, but you don't know how to solve it. You decide what you can at any time. This is Richard Fraser's work. He should have been here. I hoped he would be. He is an anthropologist who went to the meetings. And I took this slide and amended it somewhat. What was Paris? From his point of view, a place Paris was a place where you could find political and civic action expressed through gestures and rituals. There was a ritual space. It was a liminal event. I had to look up that word. You know what liminal means? In the anthropology world, it means that when you're in a culture that's on the path between two different cultural modes, you're in the middle in that unusual space where everything seems fluid. It was, of course, a gathering of people who were concerned with climate change but had no impact on the negotiations directly, but they would their attitudes would affect future. There was lots of magical thinking, ritual effectuating change. It was, for us, and I think a lot of other people, a wonderful ethnographic site. And I'll finish now with my personal reflections. What could Paris do? Well, first of all, I think we all see that it could unleash innovation. When the direction is clear, a number of sectors of society will align. The investments in insurance will take climate change into account. Industries and others who've been on the sidelines may sign up just because they see the way things are going. And I think, as prominently mentioned at Selwyn, it established a global market for green technologies. And places that are in the lead in that area, like the UK and California, see an opportunity. It's going to generate some tools for global governance. Generally accepted accounting of emissions, reporting and integration of distributed decision making, things that we don't know how to do very well. And I think at the end, and this would have been Richard's point, it's going to promote, we hope, an international culture of collaboration. And from the point of view of a century from now, that may be the most important outcome. And so that meant that all the things that you commented on, the atmosphere and the surround, was not a sideshow. It was an essential part of the transformation that this agreement set out to accelerate. So with that, I just think now we've got a little bit of time. I've saved us some time. So now I think what you've seen is views of what happened in Paris, some of them quite consonant and others not so consonant. And I hope then that you would ask some questions of our panelists and we'll have an interchange until there will be a point when the questions interfere with the reception, and we'll stop at that point. So would anybody like to, Rob, do you want to...